time for a departure here. That's Peter Nero with Love's Theme, and I'm Tom Morgan. I'll be back tomorrow night after the Trailblazer game. There will be no Morgan's Mystery Box tomorrow night, but there will be plenty of music between when I get on and when I get off. Try to figure that one out. This is KOIN Portland. Have a good night, and I'll talk to you tomorrow. It's 11 o'clock.
CBS News. It was Hollywood's big night Monday and a very big night for one film. This is Doug Poling reporting on the CBS Radio Network. At the Academy Awards, the film One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest captured the top five Oscars, including Best Picture. The movie depicts life inside a mental institution. Its stars, Jack Nicholson and Louise Fletcher, won the awards as Best Actor and Best Actress. The film's director, Milos Forman, was named Best Director. Lawrence Hobbit and Goldman won the Oscar for Best Screenplay adopted from another medium. Comedian George Burns, who is now 80 years old, was named Best Supporting Actor for his role in The Sunshine Boys, Burns' first movie in 37 years. Lee Grant was named Best Supporting Actress. That was for her role in Shampoo. More news in a moment.
We're the fresh kinds from Wonder Bread. Give us a squeeze and feel the freshness for yourself. We're wrapped warm from the oven in Stay Fresh wrappers. You can feel it when you squeeze us on a shelf.
Yes, sir, because I'm a fresh guy from Wonder Bread.
Hey, what about me?
In my Stay Fresh wrapper, I'm a star.
What a lot of crust.
Every loaf of Wonder's wrapped warm from the oven. We're the fresh guys from Wonder Bread.
Fresh Wonder Bread and English muffins.
Hi, I'm Mike Roy.
Well, I guess that'd make me Denny Bracken. And am I looking forward to the cook thing tomorrow because it's a favorite dessert?
Almost everybody's favorite, Denny, because so colorful, so cool and creamy.
Give me a tablespoon.
Key lime pie made with fresh limes, coconut, whipped cream, pistachio nuts.
Oh, never mind a spoon. Give me a shovel, huh?
All right.
It is an eye-popper and a palate-pleaser. You know, every now and then you come up with a good recipe.
Oh, sure.
Key lime pie.
Yeah.
Key lime pie. Now bring your draw. You all tomorrow to Mike's Cook Thing here on CBS. Yeah?
Democratic presidential candidates were busy with appearances Monday. During the evening, five men appeared before a televised forum in New York City. Candidates Jimmy Carter, Morris Udall, Henry Jackson, Fred Harris, and Frank Church were looking for votes for the April 6th New York primary. Wisconsin also has a primary on that date. Non-candidate Hubert Humphrey made a speech in Madison. Later, Humphrey made another speech in Minneapolis and deplored the unemployment situation.
In our great cities of America today are found millions of people who are poor, elderly, handicapped, sick, and unemployed. I tell you that if this continues, it will be like an infection in the body politic that will ultimately bring us down. So we have a job to do. For those that say that you can't do this, I tell them to get out of the way and let some people who know that we can do it move into action.
Humphrey spoke at a caucus of the Democrat Farmer Labor Party in Minneapolis. The Commerce Department reports its index of leading economic indicators rose 0.8% during February. The index used to forecast future economic activity rose for the fourth straight month. The February increase, however, was only about half as big as the one in January. Noting the improvement in the economic situation, economist Paul Samuelson says he hopes the government will not start putting on the brakes at this point.
It would seem to me tragic and unnecessary to start applying the brakes when the recovery is only a year and a half old and the unemployment rate is still far, far above what it was as recently as summer of 1974. But we've noticed the political cycle that administrations tend to be a little bit more concerned about unemployment and concerned to offset stagnation in election years. I wish every year were an election year. Then we'd all be on the side of the American people all the time.
Samuelson also says he thinks Congress has forced President Ford to bring about improvements in the economy. Tornadoes have cut a path of death and destruction across Arkansas and Mississippi. As many as 10 dead in Arkansas, 3 killed in Mississippi. One Arab has been killed in clashes between security forces and Arabs in northern Israel on the eve of a general strike planned by Israeli Arabs. 14 people, including Arabs and police and troops, were injured. 3 villages in Galilee were placed under curfew. In Philadelphia Monday night, Indiana won the NCAA basketball championship, beating Michigan 86-68. Now this.
You're listening to the beginning of something. An automobile commercial? No. As a matter of fact, it's the beginning of a new phase in a man's life. A man who looks different, moves differently, speaks differently, because he was born with cerebral palsy. The new phase in his life began when he started the engine of that car and drove off with his brand new operator's license in his pocket. His name is Joe Elko, man with cerebral palsy, college student, and now automobile driver. It upsets some people to see Joe get into that car. In fact, it upsets some people to see him at all. That's because they don't understand that although Joe may look different, inside he's no different than anyone else. He and United Cerebral Palsy are looking forward to the day when everyone will understand. In the meantime, Joe joins us in hoping you'll give generously to United Cerebral Palsy. They had a hand in helping him become what he is today, a man with a future.
Another battle appears to be gearing up between President Ford and Congress, this time over defense spending. The president says he will veto any defense bill if the Pentagon budget is cut too much below his $101 billion request. Some members of Congress want a $7 billion cut. Mr. Ford says there is no room for such major reductions in his proposals. This is Doug Poling, CBS News.
In Radio 97 News, Bumblebee Seafood and Insurance Company officials are still looking for a salvage crew to bring the badly damaged tuna boat Betty M to shore. Astoria plant manager for Bumblebee says hopes are diminishing for salvaging the Betty M, a 171-foot vessel that went aground near Elwaco, Washington, March 20th. She was en route to the cannery in Astoria. Company says the Betty M is totally aground and submerging and will soon be completely covered by sand. Oregon's Court of Appeals today ruled against a woman who received more than $541,000 in a property settlement and wanted more. The appeals court upheld a ruling by Circuit Judge Jean Lewis of Multnomah County. She gave 46-year-old Ethel Stevens possessions valued at $541,000 plus $1,500 a month and $300 a month child support for a 17-year-old boy and an 11-year-old girl. Her former husband, James Stevens, was awarded, get this, $973,000, including a condominium unit at Black Butte Ranch near Bend and a vacation home at Gearhart. Things aren't so fortunate down in Grants Pass. Teenagers have been arrested there on murder charges in the October 1974 shooting death of Ben Stilson at his rural Grants Pass home. Stilson was confined to a wheelchair. District Attorney Robert Burroughs filed murder charges against five persons after receiving new information on Stilson's death. The warrant is still out on Stilson's wife, last seen in Grants Pass about 2 weeks ago. A Portland savings and loan executive has developed an economic theory of recovery and sent a copy to President Ford and Senator Bob Packwood. Douglas Johnston says he developed his retention and redistribution theory while researching governmental retirement plans in Oregon. He envisions using public retirement fund money to provide a better return for the retiree and to stimulate the economy by spending the funds within the source state. Partly cloudy tonight, cloudy tomorrow, a little rain in the afternoon, with lows probably around 40, high tomorrow near 60. I'm Tom Morgan. Stay in touch with 97 News.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... I'm E.G. Marshall, bellwether of a fantastic flock that forms on these airwaves at this time and place. The presentiment of danger, the intimation of disaster, the uneasy, inexplicable feeling that something we cannot define is leading us into a catastrophe we cannot explain for a reason we cannot understand. A fragment of a dream that vanishes upon awakening. A wisp of an idea that eludes our comprehension and escapes our memory. Is this the way fate seems to warn us of our mortal peril? If so, it is like the warning of the rattlesnake. Too little and too late.
You will soon commit murder, Lord Arthur. This is monstrous. I have absolutely no intention. Look, I'm not a murderer. Oh,
no one is until he kills for the first time.
I tell you, I cannot commit murder.
And I tell you, you can. And you will.
I refuse to believe it.
You're all alike. You all want to pry into your future, which you have no business doing. And when you see what fate has in store for you, you refuse to believe it.
But murder?
Yes, murder. What's so special about murder? People do it every day.
Our mystery drama, The Saxon Curse, is based on the Oscar Wilde classic and was especially written for the Mystery Theater by Sam Dan and stars Paul Hecht. It is sponsored in part by Sinoff, the sinus medicines, and Allstate Insurance Companies. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
Well, sir, I see you're one of the many people who bought a new Buick Century.
That's right. Boy, you want to talk about roomy and comfortable. Just take a look in there. Go ahead.
But you have curtains hanging in your car.
Yes, and wallpaper, too.
Well, why's that?
Well, we like the Century so much, we decided to sell a house and live in it.
Huh. Well, doesn't that get just a little crowded?
Oh, I suppose it might after a while, but we aren't home that much.
Oh.
Yeah, we got a little Skyhawk up north.
Buick, dedicated to the free spirit in just about everyone.
I want that sinus medicine.
Headache tablet?
No, the sinus medicine that relieves headache and congestion, internal sinus pressure and post-nasal drip.
You mean Sinoff?
Exactly.
Compare Sinoff tablets with anything you've ever taken for sinus. No sinus tablet you can buy relieves more symptoms. Sinoff gives you a full dose of pure aspirin plus a powerful sinus strainer. Sinoff works fast to help sinus pain while you drain.
S-I-N-E-O-F-F.
Sinoff, the sinus medicines in the bright red box. Take when needed, only as directed.
Dreams. We all seek to understand the many ways in which God reveals His Word. Throughout time, God has spoken to man in dreams. Jehovah said in the Old Testament, "Listen to my words. If a man be a prophet, I make myself known to him in visions. I speak to him in dreams." So, pay attention to your own dreams. They might well reveal flashes of the future, predictions and warnings of things to come. They may give you a glimpse of God's guidance to lead you back to the peace and security of His way. For your free booklet on dreams, write to the Foundation Church, 1147 First Avenue, New York, New York, 10021. That's the Foundation Church, 1147 First Avenue, New York, New York, 10021. Things are tough all over. Even the very rich complain. They protest their wealth is being eaten away by ruinous taxes. They lament that their once sacrosanct watering places have been invaded by common folk. And most of all, they bemoan the fact that it's virtually impossible to find a decent servant. They may have a point. Quite possibly, they may have been born at the wrong time. They should have lived, say, in England around 1905, when rank had its privileges, wealth had its license, and the common people knew their place. Our hero is the youthful Lord Arthur Savile, a golden boy who lives in a golden time.
Well, well, you naughty fellow, why haven't you been to see me all this time?
Dear Aunt Clem, I never have a moment to myself.
That's because you spend all your time with Sybil Merton. I cannot understand why people make such a fuss over getting married.
I assure you, I have not seen Sybil for 24 hours. As far as I can make out, she belongs entirely to her milliners. How are you feeling?
Dear boy, as you well know, doctors are of no use at all. They can't even cure my headache.
Unfortunately, these wretched headaches seem to run in the family. You know the legend. There's an old Saxon curse leveled against one of our ancient Norman ancestors.
Poppycock! You must come into the drawing room. I have a most interesting company.
Oh, I didn't know you were engaged. Well, you needn't try to fit me in.
I have Sir Matthew and Lady Reed.
Sir Matthew Reed? He's the president of the Royal College of Physicians.
Elected by mistake, I was told.
But surely so distinguished a physician could come up with a cure for your headache.
The more distinguished the physician, the more elevated the fee. And, of course, you must meet Professor Septimus Podgers.
Professor Septimus Rogers?
Podgers.
Well, now, who is...
You haven't heard of Septimus Podgers? But everyone knows Septimus.
Except me.
Professor Podgers is the celebrated chiromantist.
What is a chiromantist?
One who reads hands.
Oh, a gypsy.
Professor Podgers is a man of science.
Oh, really?
I must introduce you.
He tells fortunes, I suppose.
And misfortunes, too. Next year, for instance, I am in great danger. It's all written on my little finger. The palm of my hand. I forget which.
But aren't you tempting Providence, Aunt Clem?
My dear Arthur, surely Providence can resist temptation by this time. Now come. You must come in and meet my remarkable Mr. Podgers.
And so I entered my aunt's drawing room, where I was introduced to her Mr. Podgers. I must say there was nothing esoteric or mysterious or romantic looking about him at all. He was a stout little man with a funny bald head, and you might take him for something between a family doctor and a country solicitor. He was staring at the palm of Sir Matthew, and I was amazed to see how Sir Matthew and Lady Reed gazed at him with rapt attention.
And what do you claim to see in my hand, sir?
I see a man of adventurous nature. You have taken 4 long voyages in the past.
By George, so I have.
You were shipwrecked once.
Amazing.
You have a passion for collecting curiosities.
But everyone knows that. It's been in the paper.
Arthur, dear boy, do not interrupt.
I see in this line, the health line, a secret. Sir Matthew, you had a serious illness between the ages of 16 and 18.
Now, how the devil would you know?
Well, it's all written here.
Extraordinary. The man is uncanny.
And now, Professor Podgers, my nephew, Lord Arthur Saville, is anxious to have his palm read.
No, I'm not exactly.
Oh, have him do it, Arthur. It's like someone opening a window in your mind.
I'm not sure those windows shouldn't remain closed.
Perhaps the boy's afraid.
Oh, I'm not afraid.
Professor, as you can see, young Lord Saville is dying to have his hand read. Don't tell him he's engaged to the most beautiful girl in London, because that news has already been published in the Morning Punch.
May I examine your right hand, Lord Arthur?
Well, if you insist.
He touched my hand, and it was as if a galvanic current ran through my body. Something happened. I don't know what, but I do know this. Suddenly, he no longer seemed to be a somewhat ludicrous, fat little man. I felt I was in the presence of great power, authority. A shudder passed through me, and I was frightened to see that the shudder also passed through him. Beads of perspiration broke out on his bald skull like a poisonous dew, and his fat, sausage-like fingers grew cold and clammy. And I knew fear, real fear, for the first time in my life. My impulse was to run from the room, but I forced myself to stand still.
I am waiting, Professor. Well, what do you see in my hand?
I see the hand of a charming young man. Within the next few months, Lord Arthur will go on a voyage.
Naturally, his honeymoon.
And lose a relative.
Well, we all lose relatives. Sometimes I think they were created for the purpose. Can you tell us any more?
No, Lady Clementine. That's all I can see.
I was furious with myself. What was this feeling of terror that had suddenly come over me? Why had I permitted myself to be frightened by some unwholesome charlatan? But was he a charlatan? Is it possible that written on my hand is some fearful secret of sin, some blood-red sign of crime? Is he gifted with a power to read it? Why do I feel now that some tragedy hangs over me? I waited for a chance to take the man aside for a moment.
What is it, Lord Arthur?
I must insist on your giving me a straightforward answer to my question.
What makes you think I saw anything in your hand, Lord Arthur?
I know you did.
I'm afraid you're mistaken.
All right, how much do you want?
I saw nothing.
How much do you want?
How much do I want?
This is how you earn your living, isn't it?
Professor Bodgers, I want...
Please, Lord Arthur, Lady Clementine will be quite angry with me if I keep her...
Whatever it is you saw, Professor, I have a right to know.
But I didn't
I'll give you 50
that...
pounds.
Yes, sir, I
do not... 100 pounds. Now listen, where can we discuss this?
You may find me at 30 West Moon Street. My hours are from 10 to 4.
What was wrong with me? Wasn't it obvious who he was? A preposterous trickster? A ridiculous quack? Yes. Yes, it was obvious. But it didn't matter. Because he was an instrument designed to pierce through the fog of the unknown and reveal my destiny. What had he seen in my hand? I need not tell you there was no sleep for me that night. Promptly at 10, I presented myself at 30 West Moon Street, a thoroughly unimpressive house in a completely nondescript neighborhood. The professor himself looked even shabbier in the daylight. He took my hand in both of his, and once again that same electric shock charged through my body and through his body, too. His eyes closed. His teeth seemed to chatter. Suddenly, he dropped my hand.
Murder! Murder. I see murder.
What do you mean, murder? Am I going to be murdered?
No. You will be the murderer.
Now, see here, Professor.
You are strange.
This is
what?
This is monstrous. Oh. Murder? I'm not a murderer.
Oh, no one is until he kills.
Now, how can you sit there and tell me such...
Such what? It's the truth.
I'm not the kind of person who...
Why didn't you leave it alone? I tried to discourage you.
I tell you, I cannot commit murder.
And I tell you that you can, and you will.
Who am I going to kill?
I don't know. Your murder line stops short.
Well, will I kill more than once?
No. There is only one murder in your hand.
And will I be caught?
No.
How can you be sure?
Because I see no line of retribution in your hand.
Then I'm to get away with it.
Yes. Because you will obviously have chosen your victim carefully and planned your murder skillfully and executed your killing flawlessly.
Carefully, skillfully, flawlessly? How? What do I know about murder?
Oh, you will learn. After all, Lord Arthur... Necessity has always been the mother of invention.
Than which truer words were never spoken. Of course, to our hero, Lord Arthur Savile, murder was something that usually took place only in the sensational newspapers. It was neither the pastime nor the preoccupation of a gentleman. But now, suddenly, he himself is notified that he is not only about to commit murder, but he is to do it successfully. I'll be back shortly with Act Two.
Allstate asks, do you own a small business? Go over these questions with your present group health and life insurance agent. If your agent doesn't say yes to every one, then...
Talk to the good hands people.
First question. Does your present major medical benefit keep on paying no matter how expensive the accident or illness becomes? If not...
Talk to the good hands people.
Is your present plan designed to pay up to 95% of hospital expenses? If not...
talk to the good hands, people. You're in good hands with Allstate.
See your Allstate agent to find out what an Allstate plan costs, what is and isn't covered, including benefit reductions and terms under which insurance continues in force. Allstate Insurance Companies, available in most states to businesses that qualify.
Here's Mother Teresa of Calcutta, whose sisters work with the sick, the dying, and the destitute of the world.
In India, we are taking care of nearly 46,000 lepers. We are now in 54 cities in India. We go to the people. All our work is going to the people.
Mother Teresa's sisters take care of the crippled and the unwanted. They have feeding centers and more, much of it due to the generosity of the American people.
I'm happy to have this opportunity to personally thank the people of the United States because we have been able to feed so many, to take care of so many. For us, Catholic Relief Service, the people of United States have been the divine providence.
Catholic Relief Services continues to assist Mother Teresa and her workers. Support CRS, along with the U.S. Catholic Conference Office of Migration and Refugees, as well as other distinguished works of the American bishops, through the American Catholic Overseas Aid Appeal.
Murder will out, said Chaucer. Murder cannot be hid, said Cervantes. And murder, though it have no tongue, will speak with most miraculous organ, said Shakespeare. That is certainly a weighty consensus of extremely well-informed opinion. And yet, here we have young Lord Arthur Savile being cast by destiny in the role of a murderer, who will not only murder, but remain undetected.
But why, Professor Podgers, why am I about to commit murder?
That I cannot say.
I have no enemies. No one hates me. Why? There must be a reason.
I'm sorry, Sir Arthur. I can enlighten you no further.
Now wait. You saw three things in my hand. Two of them you told me last night. First, that I would go on a voyage. Do you still see that?
Yes.
Second, that I shall lose a relative. Is that still to occur?
Yes.
And that I shall commit murder. Well, does that complete the list?
It does, Sir Arthur.
Yes. Well, how many relatives am I to lose?
Just one.
Just one?
Quite so, sir.
But I only have two relatives.
Two?
In all the world. There is just my twin sister, Pamela, and my aunt, Lady Clementine Beecham. Are you saying that one of them will die within the next few months?
I am saying that is what is written.
Well, which one?
I'm sorry, it doesn't say.
But one will die.
Yes, Lord Arthur.
I looked at my hand, and suddenly it was no longer the familiar five-fingered palm made of firm pink flesh and finely etched delicate lines. It was white, dead white, corpse white, like the white paper on which the death sentence is written. And here the death sentence was written in blood-red letters. Lady Clementine Beecham. And I even knew why. She would die because it would be necessary to make sure that my sister, my dearest twin, Pamela, would live. And at that moment, I felt almost at peace, almost as if I was serving the ends of a just fate. For why should Pamela, lovely Pamela, newly married and about to know the joys of motherhood, die? Why shouldn't I make sure of her love? Aunt Clem, surely a woman of 80 could have no complaints. I was able to smile. I was even able to assume a pose with Professor Podgers. Professor, I believe I owe you £100. May I write you a check?
If it's convenient, Lord Arthur.
Oh, here we are. Paid to the order of Septimus Podgers and so forth. £100 is cheap enough for such capital amusement.
Amusement?
Yes, and quite ingenious. I enjoyed every moment of it.
But I assure you, Lord Arthur, what I saw in your hand is the absolute truth.
Yes, I dare say. Remarkably good show. I trust you're available for future entertainments, parties and so forth?
I am always at your lordship's service.
And so I was committed to the killing of my Aunt Clem. But how to go about it? Direct physical violence was out of the question. I simply could not see myself assaulting my aunt. I would feel like a fool. That left one way. Poison. But what did I know about poisons? Nothing. Ah, but Sir Matthew Reed, the famous physician, was a family friend, a member of my club. He lunched there daily, as I did. It would be a simple matter to join him.
I say, Arthur, that cop seems a bit underdone. Well, it's what comes of having a French chef.
Yes, joining him for lunch was no problem. But how could I get him to talk about poisons? It was hardly a luncheon topic. But imagine my amazement when suddenly, after his second glass of port...
Speaking of poisons, Arthur...
What? I wasn't aware that we were speaking of poisons, Sir Matthew.
Well, I was thinking of poisons, so it's the same thing.
Yes, sir.
Remarkable case in the newspapers. Read about it?
No, sir.
Fella did away with his wife.
Yes, sir.
Botched it.
Is that so?
Chap was married 50 years, fell in love with a younger woman, had to get rid of the old one. Bounder deserves to be hanged.
For murdering his wife, sir?
No, for using arsenic.
Ah.
Messy, painful affair. Now, after 50 years of loyal service, the poor old lady deserves something like, well, aconitine.
Aconitine, sir?
Oh, yes. It's the creme de la creme of poisons. Swift. Takes almost immediate effect. Perfectly painless. It mixes well with food and drink. Quite palatable.
Is that so?
Arthur, you must promise me something. If after 50 years of wedded bliss with a divine Sybil, you should decide to, well, do her in, you shall by all means use aconitine.
I promise. Sir Matthew, suppose after 50 years I should wish to make a fool of myself. How could I come upon this aconitine?
Why, I expect there shall always be a Humbies and Pestle. They shall still be chemists by appointment to whomever the future monarch will be.
Humbies and Pestle. Of course. Yes, it was going along beautifully. It was as if I were following a track leading me to my sure destination. That afternoon, I strolled up St. James Street to Humby and Pestle's. Mr. Pestle, who always attended personally on the aristocracy, was a good deal surprised at the mention of the word aconitine, and in his usual deferential manner, started to mumble something about...
I assume, of course, Sir Arthur, that you have a prescription.
I beg your pardon, Mr. Pestle.
The law requires...
Oh, I hope you are not assuming that I intend something illegal.
No. It's...
You see, it's for an absolutely humanitarian purpose. I have this huge Norwegian Mastiff. You're familiar with the breed, of course.
I believe so.
Yes, I am obliged to get rid of it since it insists on biting my Swedish chauffeur. The Norwegian Mastiff and the Swedish chauffeur seem to be sworn foes. There is no possibility of a peaceful solution. It's tragic.
Yes, sir.
Since Norwegian Mastiffs are plentiful, whereas Swedish chauffeurs are rare indeed...
I think I understand, Lord Arthur.
Thank you, Mr. Pestle.
Powder form is best, and a pinch in the dog's lunch or beverage.
Ah, you are a man of great heart and understanding.
Always at your service, my lord. And may I compliment you on your remarkable knowledge of toxicology.
Was it only last night that I had met Septimus Podgers for the first time? Was it only this morning that he revealed the awful secret of my hand? Was it only this noon that I had lunch with Sir Matthew and discovered the aconitine? And has it been only 10 minutes since I walked out of Humby and Pessels with the poison in my pocket? Yes. What did Podgers say? I would execute this murder carefully, skillfully, flawlessly. Let me see. How shall I administer the aconitine to dear Aunt Clem? This could be a sticky business, and the entire project could funder. And it was remarkable how clearly I was thinking, how I was suddenly seized by the most happy inspiration.
Why haven't you been to see me all this time?
Dear Aunt Clem, I was here last night.
A likely story. You take advantage of my failing memory.
How are your headaches, dear Aunt Clem?
I would rather not discuss the wretched things.
I have brought you a cure for your headaches.
There is no cure, dear boy. It's an ancient Saxon curse.
Now, but you must try this cure, dear Aunt Clem. It's proof against Saxon curses.
Why do you say that?
Because it was invented by an American. I assure you, it's a perfect cure. You must promise to try it. It comes in this little box.
The box is charming, Arthur. It's made of silver.
Open the box. Carefully. It contains a powder. Take a pinch in a little bit of wine.
Well, I'll try it right now.
Oh, good heavens. No. You must do nothing of the kind. You see, this is a homeopathic medicine. If you take it without having a headache, it may do you no end of harm. Wait till you have one and then try it. You will be astonished at the result.
Oh, I should like to take it now. The fact is, though I despise doctors, I adore medicines. However, I shall wait for my next headache.
Oh, when shall that be?
Well, I hope not for a week. I never know.
Yeah, but you're sure to have one soon.
Oh, how sympathetic you are today, Arthur. Really, Sybil has done you a great deal of good. But now you must run away. I am dining with some frightfully dull people. If I don't get my sleep now, I shall never be able to keep awake during dinner.
Well, goodbye, dear aunt.
Goodbye, dear boy, and thank you so much for the American medicine. Give my love to Sybil.
Sybil. I must talk to Sybil. Since I should like to be as far away as possible when it happens. Of course, that's the voyage Podgers saw in my hand. I must take my leave of Sybil. But it's a month before the wedding. What excuse can I make? My dearest, I have a confession to make.
A confession? Oh, no, is it something serious? Oh, yes, it must be serious, else why would it be a confession?
I am willing to release you from your vow.
Oh, this is...
I have not told you everything.
You haven't told me everything? What have you withheld?
My dearest, I am a victim.
A victim? A victim of fate? Of circumstance?
Neither. I am a victim of severe headaches.
Headaches? Oh, you poor boy.
It runs in the family. My Aunt Clementine...
Oh, I know. She told me. There's an ancient Saxon curse.
And so you see, since you were unaware...
No, I love you despite your headaches. I accept you for what you are.
Yes, but I must take my leave of you, my darling.
Your leave? You're going? You're leaving? You will desert me?
I'm going to Vienna.
Vienna? But nobody ever goes to Vienna.
There is, in Vienna, a celebrated doctor.
A headache doctor?
Well, a head doctor.
Marvelous. And you're going to see him?
No, surely he can cure my headache.
Oh, my darling. Go. Go to him. Fly to him.
You would not mind being neglected for 10 days, fortnight, perhaps a month.
My dearest, I have so many things to do to prepare for the wedding. I shan't even know you are gone.
There you are. See how quickly and efficiently the thing has been arranged. Step by careful step, my murder has been skillfully planned. And now, can there be any doubt that it shall be flawlessly executed?
amateur, and this is only his very first attempt. So it only goes to prove that each of us has a hidden facet, an unknown talent, an ability that's kept secret even from ourselves. Does this mean that murderers are born, not made? Or does it prove that murderers are made, not born? Whatever it means, someone is going to be killed just as soon as I return with Act Three.
Here we are talking with one of the thousands and thousands of people who bought a Buick this year. This is a Skylark, right?
That's right. Pretty, huh?
Indeed it is.
You want to sit in it? I'll let you for a buck and a quarter.
Do you charge to let people sit in your Skylark?
Oh, this is a very nice car. Look, I figure when word gets out, people will be lined up for blocks. Hey, you want to honk the horn? Give me a dime.
Listen, sir, Buick dealers let people do this for free.
They do?
Yeah.
Well, I think they're missing a good bet.
Buick, dedicated to the free spirit in just about everyone.
From Maine to Monaloa, all across this great big land, there's a neighbor who is ready to lend a helping hand. When a hurricane is brewing, when an old man needs a friend, Red Cross is the good neighbor.
This is Lloyd Bridges with a favor to ask of you. Would you take a minute, just 60 seconds out of your busy day and listen? Really listen to the radio? I wouldn't intrude like this, except that I have an important message for you from the March of Dimes. Now, here it is. America's number one child health problem is birth defects. Not measles, not mumps, not the common cold, but birth defects. And the speed with which science finds the answers to that problem depends on you. Not someone else, you. Your generosity to the March of Dimes will add to the fund that supports the massive research needed to find those answers. And if you won't help, can you be sure anyone will? And if no one helps, can any of us ever hope that future generations will see the day when every child will be born free from the threat of birth defects? Please, before you go back to business as usual, show your support for this vital work. Give generously to the March of Dimes.
The order of the act has been schemed and plotted, and nothing can avert the final curtain's fall. Or so said a Russian poet. And certainly it must be said that not only has Sir Arthur's scheming been careful, skillful, and flawless, we can even add a bonus word and say meticulous. And so the deadly aconitine waits with fateful readiness the very next headache of the Lady Clementine Beecham.
While I, of course, have made myself perfectly comfortable and happy in Vienna, a delightful, if somewhat socially backward city. And since I had announced to my beloved Sybil that I was here to consult a celebrated doctor, I decided, for the sake of the record, to do so.
Headaches?
Yes, Doctor. Fierce, relentless headaches, once or twice a month.
Tell me about your dreams.
Dreams? I never dream.
You never dream? Impossible.
Yeah, but it's true. I never had a dream in my life.
We have found it.
Found what, Doctor?
The cause of your headaches. You have the headaches because you do not dream. So, all the bad thoughts are still imprisoned inside the skull. You see?
I'm not sure. By George, there might have been something to what the fellow said. Lately, I noticed I had been starting to get headaches. Maybe the Saxon curse had come down to me. But this lack of dreaming... Well, all this was of minor concern. The crucial thing was, I had made sure of my story. I had said I came here to consult a doctor. I had consulted a doctor. I could now see where the execution of the perfect crime required superb intelligence, which is perhaps why it is beyond the capabilities of the lower classes. However, my visit was to end abruptly. That evening, there was a telegram from Sybil.
Aunt Clementine died suddenly.
So, she had taken the poison. She was dead. And now, I must return at once, like the proper grieving nephew. I didn't pause to pack. I caught the night express to Paris, and from thence the train to Havre. The following morning, I was back in London.
Oh, darling, you're home.
Tell me everything. Where is poor Aunt Clem?
In the hospital.
The hospital? I thought you said she was dead.
She is quite dead. You see, she complained of a severe headache, and so she drank a glass of wine, and in just a few moments she...
Yes?
Well, she seemed to be dead, but I couldn't be sure, and so I summoned James and Harris and Charles, and they carried her downstairs to her motor car, and we all rushed to the hospital.
Ah, at the hospital, they couldn't help her.
Oh, no, she was quite dead by the time we arrived. Even Sir Matthew Reed himself was unable to bring...
Sir Matthew Reed? He was there?
Of course, he's her personal physician.
Well, what did he say, Sir Matthew?
Oh, I remember quite distinctly what he said. If I didn't know young Arthur better, I'd suspect foul play.
He said that?
He smiled when he said that. Oh, dear Arthur, no one could possibly suspect you of doing the old girl in. Why, you were miles away at the time.
Yes, in Vienna. Did he say anything else, Sir Matthew?
No, Arthur. Well, but why are you so pale?
What? Oh, the diet. Viennese diet. It must... did he perform an autopsy?
Arthur! What a perfectly gruesome thing to say. Oh, I should hope not.
You don't know, then?
Oh, my darling Arthur, you are upset. You're not yourself. I can see... Oh, I know how much poor Aunt Clem meant to you. She was dear to me also, always giving me little gifts.
Yes, darling, I should like to rest.
Of course, my dearest, rest. You must be brave. One does not lose an Aunt Clem every day.
Why was I frightened? I had been assured that all would go well. There would be no retribution, that the killing would be carefully, skillfully, flawlessly executed. It was, wasn't it? Why was I so apprehensive? Podgers had assured me. Podgers. I must see him again. I must hear it from his lips again. He must read my future again. He must tell me that I shall not be caught. I rushed to West Moon Street.
Here now. What you pounding on the door for?
I'm looking for Professor Podgers, Septimus Podgers. Is he in?
Oh, yeah. He's in.
Well, then why doesn't he answer?
Well, sir, you asked, is he in? And he's in all right, but he ain't in there. He's in jail.
In jail?
Oh, yeah. They come and carted him off about a week ago.
Jail?
Yeah. He had a bit of a confidence game. He'd get people to do all sorts of things and swindle them out of their money. How much did he take you for? Well, kiss him goodbye. You'll never see it again.
I knew it. I knew he was just a common charlatan and thief. But he had the gift. The gift of what? Prophecy. But how did I know? Perhaps it was all designed to get me to murder my aunt so he could blackmail me for the rest of my life. What could I do now? I couldn't very well visit him in prison. Oh, yes, I poisoned Aunt Clem, thinking that the death of a very old lady would cause no suspicion. But I had reckoned without Sir Matthew Reed, Sir Matthew the expert, the authority on poisons. Well, if he doesn't suspect, then I will be safe. But suppose he does suspect.
Sir Matthew said, if I didn't know young Arthur better, I'd suspect foul play. But he smiled when he said it.
Smiled? He must have meant it as a joke. Does he or does he not suspect? Why didn't it occur to me that I would inherit Aunt Clem's entire estate? That could set tongues wagging. Did Sir Arthur perform an autopsy or didn't he? Does he intend to or doesn't he? How can I find out? I must find out. I'll corner him at the club.
You'd think a French chef would know what to do with veal.
I think it's the Italian chefs who specialize in veal, Sir Matthew. The French more or less concentrate on beef.
Comes of relying on foreigners. Damn shame about your Aunt Clem.
Yes. What do you suppose was the cause of her death?
I don't know. I can't be sure.
Do you contemplate doing an autopsy?
A lady of that age? She can die for any number of reasons. Resistance low, heart not too strong. Old people die because they simply give out.
Yes, and she simply gave out. Hmm?
That has been my initial diagnosis. However...
what is it, Sir Matthew?
Just talking to you has raised a rather interesting point. What did she die of, specifically?
Well, does it matter?
In science, everything matters. That was a good idea of yours.
Idea? What idea?
That I perform an autopsy?
I didn't... Sir Matthew, do you intend to perform an autopsy?
I don't know. It depends upon my schedule. If I've no surgery in the morning, I might just, and then again, my boy, I never make plans.
Did he know? Was he playing with me? Does a person who has been poisoned by a Connatine show definite signs? Was this a game? If it was, then I have lost, for Mr. Pethrell will certainly remember selling me... Or will he? After all, they are the busiest chemists in London. Mr. Pethrell always struck me as an absent-minded type. Well, only one way to find out.
Ah, Lord Arthur.
Ah, good day, Mr. Pethrell. I was wondering if you might suggest a remedy for the gout.
The gout? Aren't you rather young to be troubled by the gout, Lord Arthur?
Well, yes, but it runs in the family, so when it attacks me in my turn, I intend to be ready for it.
we have here a stool, and one elevates one's foot.
Ah, excellent. Yes, thank you. I'll take it.
Well, I'll have it sent, Lord Arthur.
Ah, thank you so much. It's so good seeing you again. It's been a long, long time.
So it has. Ah, no. Weren't you in here a fortnight past?
Was I?
Well, it seems to me you bought some, aconitine. Yes. For your Swedish chauffeur. Oh, no. For your Norwegian mastiff. It must have been a fortnight. Well, I could look it up. It must be very careful, you know, to record the dates of all poison purchases. It's the law.
A most commendable statute. Well, good day, Mr. Pessel. I was lost. Lost. Only a miracle could save me. But the age of miracles is past, gone, vanished. I shall be charged with the murder of my aunt. I shall be tried, found guilty, and hanged. And my head, oh, my head. My poor head is splitting. Your Honor, I do not ask for mercy. I ask only for understanding. I killed my aunt to save my sister, my dearest twin sister, present living in Canada, in order that she should continue to perpetuate.
Arthur, darling, wake up.
I only acted according to the command of fate.
Sybil,
what? How did you get
Hastings
in here?
Hastings called me, said you were in a frightful shape. Nightmares and whatnot.
Oh, my head is splitting.
Poor boy, the Saxon curse. The Austrian doctor was of little help.
Nothing can help.
Oh, you must never say that. Here, drink some coffee. A hot cup of black coffee.
No, no, I don't like coffee. Oh, it's black.
I know, I put in plenty of sugar.
It won't make me feel better.
It will, I promise you. Here, drink it.
All right.
Now. Now, isn't that delicious?
Sybil. Sybil, I must make a confession.
Oh, no, you're exciting yourself.
I poisoned my Aunt Clem.
Oh, you did nothing of the sort.
I did. I gave her poison.
Poor boy, you feel so badly about her death. You've been having nightmares.
I tell you, I poisoned her.
You did no such thing, and Sir Matthew can prove it.
Sir Matthew?
Of course. He performed an autopsy on poor Aunt Clem this morning.
What?
Death was due entirely to natural causes.
That's... That's wonderful. I feel light-headed. Completely.
Oh, then it worked. The medicine worked.
What medicine?
Aunt Clementine's medicine. In this little silver box.
That box? That silver box?
It's the box you gave her.
Sybil, did you...
It has the remedy, the American headache remedy.
Sybil, no.
Oh, how peaceful. Oh. How calm you look. It works. The remedy works.
Sybil, you didn't.
The day you left for Vienna, I told your aunt it was because of your headaches. And she said, well, my dear, take this American remedy he gave me for my headache. And I said, dear Aunt Clem, don't you need it? And she said, oh, I'm much too old to experiment with Americans. Just put a pinch of this powder in wine or coffee or tea.
Oh, Sybil.
And so I did. And now you feel better, don't you? Oh, you must tell me the name of this remedy. I shall suggest it to all my friends. Arthur? Oh, I see. It even puts one to sleep. Oh, this is wonderful. You rest now, Arthur, darling. And I'll wait for you to wake up.
As you might assume, she had a very long wait. Well, whatever you want to say about Professor Podger's prediction, his three basic forecasts did come true. Lord Arthur lost a relative. He did go on a voyage. And there was a murder. Not that Sybil was ever tried for it. I'll be back shortly.
I don't believe it. Tell me again.
Okay. The Internal Revenue Service has over 80 free publications to help answer all those taxing questions you have on your mind.
Uh-huh. What if I'm a flagpole sitter whose pole was attacked by termites?
All right. Flagpole, termites. It's publications 547 and 584.
An ant left me an elephant under 12 years of age for me to care for.
Mm-hmm. Adolescent elephant. 501.
People throw money when my 98-year-old uncle lifts weights at the beach. Is that income?
Mm-hmm. 554 and 525.
Wow. Does the IRS have an answer for everything?
Well, just about. There are over 80 free publications for the asking at any IRS district office. You can write for them by using the order blank on your 1040 tax package. Yep. Over 80 tax answering publications. Free. From the IRS.
Consider the word written. For centuries, we have heard it used in all sorts of mystical context. It is written in the stars. It is written in the wind. It is written in our fate. It is written in our palm. It is easily dismissed as the meanderings of the imagination, but certainly something must be written somewhere. There must be some sort of written plan. Else how do you account for the fact that we human beings make the same mistakes over and over and over again. Our cast included Paul Hecht, Catherine Byers, Cork Benson, and Guy Sorrell. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. And now, a preview of our next tale.
Still, he did not move. How could he not move, I thought. And then, I realized that his hand, his big hand that lay in both of mine, had no substance at all. It was as though my hands held air. I touched nothing. I held nothing. The hand, big and strong and firm as it appeared to be, was nothing. And then I knew. Certainly and surely, I knew that I had come home to find my house inhabited by ghosts.
Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by Buick Motor Division. This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
Bill Garrity and the Moon Watch follow CBS News at midnight. This is AM 97 KOIN Portland.
CBS News. At least 12 people are dead as the result of a series of tornadoes that slashed through parts of Arkansas and Mississippi. Good morning. I'm Mike Stanley reporting on the CBS Radio Network. Hardest hit was the Arkansas town of Cabot, where at least 65 businesses in the 6-to-8 block portion of town were destroyed or heavily damaged. At least 6 people died there. Another 150 were injured. Arkansas State Police Lieutenant Jim Rowell describes the scene for CBS News.
It's a small community. It's about 3,000 population. And it moved right through the center of town. If you're familiar with the World War II aerial war, your bombings of foreign European towns, that's about the way it's. It's just the pressure of just rubble. Mainly rubble is about all left when those things hit that way.
In addition to the devastation of Cabot, a twister touched down and claimed another life in the Arkansas community of Drasco. In Mississippi, a tornado ripped through the center of Canton, a town of 10,000. A state civil defense spokesman there said at least 5 people were killed and as many as 100 others injured. CBS News continues following this message.
The fresh guys, we're the fresh guys, we're the fresh guys, we're Wonder Bread. We got that fresh, fresh feeling that makes a bread perform. Cause we're the Wonder Fresh guys, we're wrapped while we're still warm. It's that fresh, fresh feeling that makes a sandwich star. Cause we're the Wonder Fresh guys, comes twice us at the store.
Feel the freshness of Wonder Bread. Enjoy fresh tasting Wonder English muffins too.
I've got a tax question.
Shoot.
Now, my son went to Europe on a vacation. While he was there, he picked up a couple of bucks working on a farm. Is that income taxable?
54,525.
What kind of answer is that?
Well, those are the numbers of the free IRS publications that probably will contain your answers.
Uh-huh.
There are over 80 free IRS publications, and you can get them by writing or visiting your local IRS office.
Gee.
80 free IRS publications to answer the taxing questions on your mind.
One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest has scored an unprecedented Hollywood Grand Slam, becoming the first picture in the 42-year history of Oscar presentations to win 5 top awards. It was named Best Picture of the Year, and its stars, Jack Nicholson and Louise Fletcher, received Best Actor and Best Actress awards, respectively. Director Milos Forman won Best Director honors, while the Oscars for Best Screenplay adapted from other material went to writers Lawrence Hauben and Bo Goldman. Lee Grant was voted Best Supporting Actress for her role in Shampoo, while sentimental favorite George Burns was named Best Supporting Actor for his role in The Sunshine Boys. The 80-year-old cigar-smoking comedian had this reaction.
They wanted somebody old, and I'm old. They wanted somebody that came from New York, and I was born in New York. And they wanted somebody of That was in Vaudeville, and that's where I came from. I was born in Vaudeville, too.
Byrne said he was a natural for the part. Senator Henry Jackson, campaigning in New York, apparently still considers Jimmy Carter his main opponent. Despite the former Georgia governor's difficulties, Carter's name has been struck from the ballots of 10 congressional districts in New York's April 6th primary. CBS News correspondent Leslie Stahl, covering the Jackson campaign, reports from Utica, New York.
Jackson kept up his verbal battering of Jimmy Carter, the man he sees as his chief rival in the primaries. Last week, Jackson went to court for relief when 41 of his New York delegates almost lost their positions on the ballots because of a technical snafu. But now that Carter plans a court case over 50 delegates he lost for technical reasons, Jackson says Carter is whining and not paying attention to the concerns of New Yorkers. At a news conference in Binghamton, Jackson said his relentless attacks are meant to smoke out Carter on the issues.
I don't know what his program is. I can't find it out. I think the people have a right to know, and I'm going to be on the attack. But I think he has an obligation to articulate his issues and not his complaints. Going around whining.
Jackson also said he'd have no hesitancy in accepting Morris Udall as his running mate. Leslie Stahl, CBS News, Utica, New York.
Hi, I'm Mike Roy.
Well, I guess that'll make me Denny Bracken. And am I looking forward to the cook thing tomorrow because it's a favorite dessert?
Almost everybody's favorite, Denny, because it's so colorful, so cool and creamy.
Give me a tablespoon.
Key lime pie made with fresh limes, coconut, whipped cream, pistachio nuts.
Oh, never mind a spoon. Give me a shovel, huh?
All right.
It is an eye-popper and a palate pleaser. You know, every now and then you come up with a good recipe.
Oh, sure.
Key lime pie.
Yeah.
Key lime pie. Now bring your draw. You all tomorrow to Mike's Cook Thing here on CBS. Yeah?
I drive my rig over 100,000 miles a year. And I didn't know what to make of it when they lowered the speed limit to 55. And well, to be honest about it, I didn't like it. For a lot of reasons. But I can't argue with the facts about saving energy and lives. I can't argue this point either. The 55-mile-an-hour speed limit. It's the law.
A public service of this station, the U.S. Department of Transportation, and the Advertising Council.
Daisy Products Company reports possible defects in the cutting blades on three models of its electric can openers. There are the Daisy model 671H and Sears Roebuck & Company model numbers 259-83-8100 and 259-83-8300. The models were manufactured in October and bear the coding 1075 on the bottom. Daisy says the cutting blades may create metal shavings, which could drop into food and be eaten by the consumer. Mike Stanley, CBS News.
6 minutes after 12 midnight on Tuesday morning, March 30th. Good morning, my name's Bill Garrity. I'll have local news for you at 12:30. In the meantime, let's relax and hear the music on Music Radio 97.
K-O-I-N.